I'm a legal machine. With me is...
The Alley Frank. Mr. Fix-It.
Please put your hands and legs together for Lee from Huddersfield singing Faith No More's I Started a Joke. Come on now. Let's have it. Don't fight it. Come on now. Here we are.
The following podcast discusses mature themes with explicit language that may be disturbing or infuriating or sophomorically amusing to some listeners. Discretion is advised.
He's stimulating a vulva. When did you watch that video, dude?
Let's watch it.
It's not very good for me. A lot of fists.
I want to read the comments for that video. I want to see the trolling in those.
Too much fist. That was actually really interesting, dude.
So was Alan Moore's hard talk interview about stimulating a vulva?
Oh, I was going to say, I thought it was Alan Moore talking
about this. He's nuts, dude. He really is nuts.
Not as much as Grant Morrison, I would say.
Well, see, that's what I was going to say. Well, when you were talking about the Killing Joke, Grant Morrison was interviewed saying that no one gets the ending of Killing Joke, that Batman kills the Joker at the end.
Yeah, but that's not in the actual original script, and I think Alan Moore, I don't know if Alan Moore actually went on the record to say that was incorrect.
He said he spoke to Alan Moore, and Alan Moore's like, yeah.
No, Grant Morrison, I don't think he said that he spoke to Alan Moore.
It's on one of those Fat Man for Batmans. I remember hearing it.
I think that I listened to that one, because I was looking for Grant Morrison material for my Martian Manhunter 60th anniversary special, yada yada, so I listened to I think it's a 2 or 3 part episode, and I listened to all of it, and I don't think he actually talked to Alan Moore, because Alan Moore doesn't like Grant Morrison, so I don't think they conversed about it. No, they don't like each other at all, but especially it's mostly Alan Moore doesn't like Grant Morrison, so I don't think Alan Moore would be confiding any secrets.
Because I literally watched a show on him where he interviewed himself,
and
he
was
pretty harsh. He was harsh on himself.
Alan Moore is a fellow that just doesn't get along very well with most people, and Grant Morrison is somebody who has a keen commercial sense and a willingness to prostitute himself to major publishers, where Alan Moore does not. And actually, the funny thing is, Alan Moore does have a pretty decent commercial sense as well, or at least he did, and I think he gained some sort of self-loathing, or he came to hate other people that were willing to commercially exploit him, and so he went the exact opposite direction and became anti-commercial. So, but no, Alan Moore can't stand Grant Morrison. I think one of the only people that Alan Moore halfway likes is Neil Gaiman, but pretty much everybody else that was a contemporary of his, and including former people that he worked with, I don't think he can stand Dave Gibbons.
Oh, Dave Gibbons.
I think they get on okay, because if I recall correctly, Alan Moore handed over his Watchmen checks to Gibbons.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I think he probably handed over his League of Extraordinary Gentlemen to, and those two seem to get on famously. But I think, I don't know if it was Steve Bissette or Rick Veitch, one of the two, they had a falling out because the guy had said something criticizing Alan Moore in an interview somewhere, just and not even a major criticism, just oh yeah, Alan Moore doesn't want to do this, so we're not doing that, and it's kind of lame, I wish we wouldn't do that. And Alan Moore's okay, right, that's it. And then that's it. They never contacted that guy ever again. Sure, why not?
Very nice.
Have you heard Alan Moore?
Lacking the Gandalf beard, of course.
Have you heard Alan Moore speak?
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know that you have. He doesn't talk that often.
I'm sure that I have.
I started a killing joke which started the whole world bitching.
Or is it they didn't show? Do you want to talk about the killing joke?
Oh, we definitely need to talk about the killing joke because Mr. Fix-It saw it. He paid. Well, no, you got a free ticket, right?
I got a free ticket. Thank God for that.
Well, there was the blow up at the SDCC panel.
Yeah, but he's actually gone to see the movie at the theater.
Right, but we were talking, dude, this is San Diego. I remember earlier when we were talking about everything at San Diego Comic Con, and that was a big thing that happened at San Diego Comic Con, where what's his name? Call that guy a pussy or whatever.
Yeah, basically a reporter for Bleeding Cool, which you got to put that in quotations, reporter. Well, actually, anybody in comics
it's the
journalism.
Internet
you
now,
gotta,
now everyone
unless you're Heidi McDonald.
We're reporters, we got microphones.
Sure, right. But yeah, so he's shouting from the back of the room, hey, have you empowering Batgirl by having her have sex?
Back the room, they let everybody have they had that little microphone where you walk up and ask questions. No,
well, different people have different versions of the story. The version that I was hearing was the guy was hauling out from the back of the room that how was it to empower Batgirl by having her have sex with Batman and blah, 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 something along those lines. Brian Azzarello was like, what'd you say? Why don't you repeat yourself, you pussy? So, and a lot of people who are already having trouble with Killing Joke being perceived as a misogynistic work, having a gender-centered pejorative hurled at this reporter did not sit well with them. I don't think that if you're on a panel, you should be calling anybody a fucking pussy.
There's no
you're there in a fucking professional capacity. You're there representing Warner Brothers Animation. Don't call people fucking pussies, you fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
But I fucking hate Brian Azzarello.
I do now too.
Hey, asshole Erla, whatever the hell you want to call him. I don't like him as a writer. He has no business writing superhero stuff. He doesn't like it. He doesn't have any aptitude toward it. He obviously has contempt for it and its fans. Quit fucking giving him work in superhero shit. Let him do crime shit, which is all he really wants to fucking do anyway.
But I thought that Bruce Timm was some DC god that all of his animated projects are.
Yeah, but it was written by Brian Azzarello.
No, no, no. The first 30 minutes is him.
Well, basically,
then they kick into Alan Moore stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no,
Alan Moore is even trashes too, right?
Well, Alan Moore wants nothing to do with any adaptations. Have you ever actually read Killing Joke?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you think of Killing Joke as a story?
I thought it was kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was the highlight of the book?
Let's see. This was probably 15 years ago that I read it. Oh, Brian Bolland artwork.
Right. The artwork is fucking gorgeous.
This isn't even a question.
Yes, yes. That's the highlight. Alan Moore's kind of disowned the story. Very adult, very edgy work of its time. But in the years since then, it's been almost 30 fucking years now. It's like 29 years, I think. People have kind of turned on the story because...
Like Dark Knight Returns?
Yeah, well, do people really turn on Dark Knight Returns?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Everybody hates Frank Miller and think Frank Miller's been a hack his whole career now.
Yeah, and that's not fair.
They've gone back through time and they said Dark Knight Returns is terrible now.
Except Daredevil is a great run. Dark Knight Returns is still a great work that was hugely influential and still very entertaining. Year One, I think most people at least give Year One the benefit of the doubt.
Maybe Year One. I haven't heard a lot of bad shit talked about Year One. But Dark Knight Returns, it's totally turned out Dark Knight.
I think the first Sin City story, The Long Goodbye, I think it was called, that was great.
Because
those movies, the second one especially, nobody like turned everybody off.
Yeah.
All that green screen shit just like really turned people off at Sin City. Plus, in the meantime, between the first two Sin Cities, or the first and second Sin City, Frank Miller did The Spirit, and people fucking hated The Spirit. Dude,
have you watched it?
I've not seen it, no.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway.
It's bad.
So Alan Moore kind of disowned the story. I personally read it back in, I think, 91, and I got, I think, a seventh printing of the book at that point. It had only been a few years. I never really liked the story that much. I thought it was an okay origin story for the Joker, but I just love the artwork. It's beautiful, and I love the coloring. I thought it was a great looking book. I think I still own my copy from back then. But like once Batgirl became a popular character, I mean, she hadn't really been that popular in a long time. That's why they retired her. And the story, when it was originally written, wasn't supposed to be in continuity, so they weren't. Alan Moore didn't intend to actually break the real Batgirl. Yeah, it's supposed to be like an out of continuity thing, like an Elseworld before they had Elseworlds. But now that Batgirl's become a popular character, she's among the most popular DC characters at this point. Also, she's become a major flashpoint character in terms of like fridging of female characters, like women who have violence committed against them in order to motivate the male characters around them, which is 100% what the Killing Joke was. So yeah, so there has been a big backlash against the book in recent years. Now, I got really pissed off because they were doing like a Joker variant cover month at DC. Rafael Albuquerque, a guy who I think probably is most famous for working on American Vampire, he did a very provocative cover, which you've probably seen on the internet.
I saw them.
Where it's the Joker holding a gun on Batgirl and she's got like a lipstick smeared smile on her face while she's crying and clearly breaking down. And so social media successfully rallied forces to demand DC not publish the cover. And then the artist himself said, yeah, please don't publish the cover. So they didn't publish the cover. And that really pissed me off because most comic book covers...
People took issue with it because they were saying it was like rape porn and whatever.
It's art. So this person crafted a piece of art that elicited a strong emotional reaction. The art itself did not depict anything deserving of any sort of censorship. It was a very evocative image. It was an image that conjured up a great deal of emotional resonance that related back to The Killing Joke. I don't think that we have enough legitimate art in comics. The commercial aspect of the medium always seems to dominate. So for them to take an image that actually was that potent and to prevent it from being published infuriates me. It makes me very angry because that is art. And so much of the shit that we put out is just stupid fucking popcorn crap. And you wanted to make a point about the response to the Batgirl as well.
Specifically to that, I actually saw the outrage before I saw the cover. And then when I saw the cover, I was like, this can't be what everybody's mad about. Like, this can't be what this isn't that big of a deal. And then I was like, oh, really? Like, this is what everyone's freaking out about, right?
People are very sensitive these days.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, and that's fine. But the problem is that it's a smaller group of people that have a gigantic voice now because of it, because of the social medias and whatnots and comment sections.
A disproportionate voice, I would say.
I feel like we're going down. So my whole thing with this is, and I get the same thing annoys me with Game of Thrones too, because people can take the exact same blame. How could they treat Sansa that way? She's getting raped in this television show. This is unbelievable. And I think people forget that, like, these are fictional characters. These characters are not real. Like, if you talk about it, well, how dare they treat Barbara Gordon that way? She's only in this book to motivate the masculine men who are going to go and avenge her paralysis and everything. Barbara Gordon is not a real character. This isn't based on someone's life and they're twisting an autobiography to make someone something they're not. This is a completely fake character with no real continuity. You know, the continuity stops and is rebooted every 5 minutes. So when Barbara Gordon gets shot and paralyzed, and that's really the only use she has in the entire book is to motivate Batman to go after the Joker, chill the fuck out. And also, part of it is because Barbara Gordon is popular now, and looking back at 1987 and say, how could you treat this character I love so much so poorly? Well, in 1987, she was not that popular. And honestly, she probably got popular via Oracle and then moving. So you can't have one without the other. So you look back at it and go, oh, how dare they treat the character I love? Well, before this, nobody loved the character. So chill the fuck out. It reminds me of when Peter David, who did Peter David kill in Spider-Man?
Gene DeWolf,
where he said nobody, Gene DeWolf hadn't appeared in the book for a year and he never got a single letter about it. But as soon as he kills the character nobody cares about, he gets a flood of mail coming in saying, I love Gene DeWolf. That was my favorite character. And he was like, fool nobody. Nobody. It's the exact same thing. And then on top of that, the fictional characters, chill the fuck out.
I'm going to half agree and half disagree with you.
That's fine.
Batgirl was created to be on the TV show. She wasn't a comic book character. They retroactively added her to the comic books after she was on the TV show. She's a obviously derivative character of Batman. Her name is Batgirl. She had her own little strip in the 1970s. She never really went anywhere as a solo character. For most of the 1980s, she wasn't being used. When she was shot and paralyzed in The Killing Joke, the intention of the writer was that story was going to be out of continuity. And so it shouldn't have impacted on the actual stories.
What, okay, so who was it that, because I read that apparently there's a famous quote where they're talking to either the writers or editors where they were running through whether or not they should shoot Barbara Gordon, and his response was, shoot the bitch?
You're thinking of Supergirl. When they killed Supergirl during Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Was that Supergirl? Was
It was Dick Giordano, and basically he saw Supergirl as Superman with tits, and he wrote a note back saying, kill the bitch.
Right.
And that's how Supergirl got killed.
So people are apparently really upset about that too.
Well, no, and rightly in that case, I think.
Supergirl is not real. They're not talking about someone in the office and saying, well, shoot the bitch, fire the bitch. You know what I mean? They're not saying, they didn't say, hey, Dick Giordano, we're thinking about firing miscellaneous female writer, and he said, fire the bitch. He didn't say that. They're talking about a fictional character. Her feelings are not hurt. So your feelings should not be hurt, okay? This is troubling to me. If you're getting offended that he referred to a fictional character that does not exist as a bitch.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? Do you see where I'm saying?
I talk a lot and it takes me a long time to get to my point.
Okay, go ahead.
You should probably know this after 20 years.
I'm sorry.
So anyhow, at the time that Batgirl was paralyzed, I agree with you. She really didn't matter that much. I think that there were fans of the TV show. I don't think those fans were very well represented in the comics. There wasn't like a huge backlash when they did that. And she didn't appear in comics for a number of years. She was brought back, and she wasn't like, it wasn't prominent either. She was brought back in the latter issues of Suicide Squad, a low-selling cult book for DC. She was brought back most specifically, I believe, because Kim Yale, who was the co-writer on the book, had affection for the character from the TV show and wanted to see her progress beyond just being a victim in The Killing Joke. And that's when you started the development of Oracle, who by the mid-90s had become a very important, very, very useful character, not only in the Batman circles, but more and more around the greater DC universe. I still am of the firm opinion that Oracle was a far more valuable character to the universe than Batgirl could possibly be, because she was the character who connected everybody. She was the deus ex machina that allowed for any kind of story you wanted to be told, so long as you needed somebody who could find out information and hack a computer and all that kind of shit. It all went back to Oracle. Everything that you needed to get done with techno stuff and with information gathering went through Oracle. In fact, a number of years ago, they took a minor Batman character, the Calculator, and they turned him into the Oracle of the bad guys. So the fact that they actually had a universe-spanning character that's the evil opposite of Barbara Gordon shows how important she was in the DC universe. You know, Simone was a fan of the character. She wanted to bring Batgirl back, and that's what they finally got to do with the New 52. And when they first started that, they were kind of oblique about how much of continuity was going to carry over in the New 52. It wasn't supposed to be a reboot at first, and then finally they committed to it being a reboot. But they still kept the Killing Joke stuff. They still kept the fact that she had been paralyzed temporarily by the Joker. And now they're doing DC Rebirth, where they once again reiterated that that happened. At this point, obviously, Barbara Gordon has become a much more popular character. a much more central character of the DC Universe. And also in recent years, she's been embraced by a younger generation of readers because they've made her a new hip heroine for the DC Universe. So she, like Harley Quinn, is a gateway character to people who wouldn't necessarily even reading comic books. So they're going to be much more sensitive to what happens to that character and much more invested in that character than old school comic fans that remember the days when who the fuck's Batgirl. So getting back to Supergirl, Supergirl was a much more important character. She would have been in solo strips going back to the 1950s. Throughout the 60s, 70s, she had her own strip in Action Comics or Adventure Comics. She had her own book at DC prior to her death. The reason why people get mad now about what Dick Giordano said in 1986 is because of the institutional, patriarchal suppression and humiliation, degradation, destruction of female characters in the industry. It's a male-dominated industry. Female creators, until recent years, have not had a very good foothold in the industry itself. Female readers have struggled to become invested in the comic book industry. I remember the days, like back in the 90s, where female readers, the people who came into my shop and bought books, including the woman that I ran a shop with for 6 years, they tended to focus on niches. Like, there were a lot of women who read X-Men comics. There were a lot of women who read, like, the Bad Girl stuff, like Catwoman and, to a lesser degree, Lady Death. And there were women who would invest in some of the mainstream characters like Batman and Spider-Man and Superman. But they didn't tend to invest in the entire universe, with the exception of the X-Men books. So they were kind of isolated from the actual fandom itself, because oftentimes there would be off-putting stuff and attitudes that were reflected in the narratives that told you, even if you didn't hear Dick Giordano actually say, kill the bitch, the stories told women trying to read the stories that the attitudes behind those stories was, kill the bitch. So while breaking down institutional alienation of female readers and minority readers, you do have, let's say, social justice warriors, but also a new generation of readers who are younger and more diverse in sexuality and in color and ethnic origins, whatever. And they're longing for positive representation in comics, and they don't want their heroes, those heroes that are specifically for them, females, black, Indian, Muslim, they don't want their heroes to be fucked with. And because they have so few heroes, so few people they can get behind that reflect them and their lives and their cultures, they are very sensitive about how they're treated. And I think back to, like, if you fuck with Captain America, I get really fucking pissed off, because that's a guy I've been invested with for decades. But by the same token, if you've got a Muslim reader who has become very invested in Kamala Khan, the Miss Marvel, who's only been around for about 3 or 4 years now, but she's the only fucking cool Muslim you got to work with in the entire comics, you know, especially mainstream comics, you're going to be very protective of that character. You take a character like Captain Marvel, who is like Marvel's official Wonder Woman type character, their big iconic character. Marvel spent a lot of years trying to develop that character. First as Miss Marvel with a fellow named Brian Reed. Brian Reed wrote Miss Marvel for like 5 fucking years. And it wasn't a major selling book. It was a book, I think, that Marvel probably took a loss on because they just wanted to have a prominent female character in their universe because they knew they didn't have a Wonder Woman. And then what happened is a woman named Kelly Sue DeConnick started writing the character and wrote her in such a way that she resonated very strongly with Marvel's female readership. And so instead of being a loss leader for them just so they had representation, all of a sudden they had the character written in such a way that it resonated with that audience. And now Captain Marvel is getting her own movie because there's a fan following that actually call themselves the Carol Corps who are making that book very popular. They've got Civil War II going through the comics right now, and it's not Captain America versus Iron Man, it's Iron Man versus Captain Marvel on the two sides of the war. So when your character, your representation in these comics is fucked with, it makes sense that you're going to have major blowback against that. The issue I have with the case of Killing Joke is the fans weren't there in 1987 when that happened. But by the same token, maybe DC Comics needs to back off from constantly referencing the Killing Joke because it's a story that no longer resonates with the current readership, and in fact angers and alienates a lot of the current readership. And it's also a sticking point because you've got a generational struggle between people who read that book back in the day and still have strong feelings about that book, positive feelings about it, and then a modern generation that has very negative feelings. Who are you going to serve? The 45, 55 year old guys that are pissed off that they're chick Ghostbusters? Or do you want to actually try to get people to buy comics for the next 20 to 30 years instead of fucking stopping reading comics and just bitching about them on the internet because you're old people who can't afford comics? comic books anymore.
I guess if you put
it
that
way. I take a little offense to have Ghostbuster crack, but go ahead.
I guess if you put it that way. Okay, so I was thinking it more as don't call my character a bitch. You're being disrespectful to character. I guess if you put it in the context of that's just.
Nobody ever raped and paralyzed. Because the thing is, there's actually pages of Killing Joke that Brian Bolland drew where she's nude in the photographs.
Uh-huh.
And they censored those images in the published book. But just the fact that you know that exists and you know that in the original story there is implied rape
yeah.
of both Jim Gordon and Barbara Gordon. And there's also, in Azzarello, the guy who wrote the Killing Joke cartoon adaptation, he wrote a Joker graphic novel a few years ago where the Joker rapes a woman and then like leaves money for her to like compensate her for the rape or some shit, or left money for the boyfriend or some crap like that. And you see the Joker is like cinching up his belt after doing it. And it's like, this is the motherfucker you guys thought would be a good idea to write the fucking Batgirl movie, you dumb sons of bitches.
Batgirl movie?
The guy who wrote the Joker graphic novel wrote the Killing Joke adaptation.
I've read the Killing Joke. I've read it several times, so I'm very...
So that I get. Okay, so I understand being pissed off then about the Killing Joke. Like, why are you adapting this now? Like, this doesn't make any sense to adapt now, especially since she is such a popular character.
Well, it does.
And if you're going to adapt it and be like, oh, she's so popular, let's adapt the Killing Joke, then you've got, there's something wrong with you, right?
Well, that's just it, though. They've adapted Batman Year One and The Dark Knight Returns in recent years. They've adapted Watchmen as both a motion comic and a motion picture. So literally, of those books that DC published that were like major vanguards of the 1980s, that's the last one they had left to adapt. They also knew that Mark Hamill had said, you know, I'm done doing Joker voicing unless you guys adapt the Killing Joke. So there were a lot of people who are older people who read the book when it came out, who I don't think understand what that book means to people now versus what it meant to people back then. They still think it's this great work.
But then you would say the same thing about Mark Twain. Someone read Mark Twain now.
And that's a valid argument too.
And the point is, when I read it then, it shocked me that the Joker was that cruel. The Joker's truly cruel in that book. He has no mercy. He goes after Batman on another level. So if some kid reads it now and he's like, well, you hurt my Batgirl. Your Batgirl didn't fucking exist. She didn't exist in my world.
Except, as Mac was pointing out, when people get upset about Game of Thrones and getting rapey, usually it's not the rape that's in the books necessarily. It's the additional rape specifically for the TV show. It's like having Jaime rape.
Have you read the books?
But hold on. But Jaime raping Cersei at the funeral of their son
yes.
was not from the books. They had sex, but they had consensual sex in the books. In the show,
no, she fights him off in the book. She tells him, "Don't do this here. There's priest on the other door, behind the door." He's like, "Fuck that. I'm getting some." I think they literally almost fuck on his body, and she's just like, and they talk about how she pushes it away, but she wants him. She pushes it away, and she wants him. The books are always going to be darker because they came out first.
So I haven't read the books. That's what I heard about. But
I have heard it's additionally rapey too.
Okay,
yes.
But like Sansa, when she gets raped by Bolton, my understanding is that wasn't from the books. The actual raping of her.
If that's the newer two books, no, I haven't read.
My understanding is the stuff with the sand snakes are showing their titties to Bronn is not from the books. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of additional nudity and rapey type shit that's in the show that wasn't in the books. And I think because of the backlash we've gotten this most recent series where they've gone way the other way and now all the women are the biggest kick-ass people and they've killed almost everybody between the women and the Iron Throne in this last season of Game of Thrones. Hopefully you're not spoiled, folks.
Hold on, we're way off from the Killing Joke. Go back.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Because I brought up people being outraged at the rapiness of Game of Thrones too.
Right. So they're adding stuff to make it worse. Even a bad situation, when you're taking what was in the original books, which may or may not deserve criticism, but then you're adding another layer of problematic material in adapting it for an audience, being aware of who the current audience is, that's an issue. And that's one of the problems with Killing Joke, is you're not just adapting the book into a 30 or 40 minute cartoon, you're then adding another half hour worth of new material, which is crafted with the modern audience supposedly in mind, except the writers and the producers of the movie don't understand that audience because they're old misogynistic fucks and they do dumb shit like have Batman and Batgirl at each other's throats and then Batgirl fucks Batman, which is something that I know they established in the old Batman cartoon show. It was gross then. I still find it super gross. As a comic book fan, Batgirl and Robin were a couple. You don't have Batgirl fuck Batman because she's Batgirl and he's Batman. Batman fucks Batwoman.
Which never existed.
No, Batwoman has existed.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. The history of these characters back in the 50s.
Way to open Frank Dora's box. Here we go.
back in the 50s, because of the Wortham campaign against comics and his insinuation that Batman and Robin were gay, they created Batwoman and Batgirl to be like the girl versions of our heroes and have adventures with them to show, no, they're just red-blooded, straight American men. And it wasn't until years later that they switched Batgirl from this blonde chick named Betty Kane into Barbara Gordon, and that was all coming from the TV show. And in recent years, they brought back Batwoman, but now she's a lesbian. That's a whole other thing. Point is, Batman shouldn't be fucking Batgirl because she's the girl, and it's just gross. And also, because Batgirl has an established relationship with Robin that became romantic over the years, so why are you fucking your young ward's girlfriend who is not contemporaneous to your age, you creepy son of a bitch?
Yeah, that is weird.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right. One's man, one's girl. Those are the names of the characters. It's weird.
I saw the movie. I've read the book, and I can agree. I'll agree with you that the first part that was written in for the movie, I think actually hurt the movie, if anything. It didn't flush out the characters. It made no sense to me. You have this kind of serial killer or this sociopath character that's obsessed with her, and they do some more fucked up shit than you haven't seen. Like, there's a scene where these hookers are leaving the boat, and the chick looks and tells them, tell your boss next time that I have mask. We didn't have to use a pillowcase. And she tosses this thing at him. The guy looks at it as he tosses it off the boat, lands in water. It's a Batgirl mask. So apparently he put a Batgirl mask on the hooker as he's banging the shit out of her. He's super obsessed with her. It made no sense. Like, if you're gonna adapt it, I get what you're saying, where out of its time, it's not the 80s anymore. Joker is three different Jokers now. They're now at the bottom of the Alan Moore well. They got nothing left to mine out of his creations for DC.
Did they adapt the Green Lantern story yet?
Dude.
In animation?
Yes. They did. The Mongo story.
It was in the Green Lantern cartoon?
Yeah. They've mined everything. There's nothing left. Jeff Johns has created his career off of Alan Moore.
They haven't done a Swamp Thing cartoon yet.
But he's coming out in the
Dark Universe or whatever.
Much, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be
Justice League Dark.
But the buildup for the Batgirl in the theater, I saw people just looking around like confused. Like, people are like, this isn't the Killing Joke. I went with a group of five guys. Two of them were versed in comics, which I wasn't really impressed, because when the movie was over, they were that's amazing. I'm like, dude, that wasn't the Killing Joke, because the first 30 minutes is Batgirl the movie. It's about her struggles. And even when it gets to the Killing Joke, it's not really the Killing Joke. It's selected scenes of the Killing Joke, and they just kind of combine them. When you have this on a movie screen, the animation does not hold up for shit.
Yeah,
it looks bad.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, so my understanding is Batgirl becomes too aggressive of a vigilante.
Yeah.
And Batman calls her out and basically dismisses her because she's too dangerous.
They do this crazy line where he's like, you don't know where it feels like to be at the edge, to look over the abyss.
And then and lose all hope.
Yeah, and that psycho dude, they catch him, and which is funny because he almost kills Batman with bazookas. After Batman, apparently Batman is preoccupied because he just got some Batgirl pussy, and so he's just out of his mind.
Also the part where she throws him on the ground and humps him.
She rapes him. She rapes Batman. Let's call it what it is. He's on the ground fighting her, and she rips off her shirt, and then the camera pans away, and it's just implied that she went to town on him. So,
well, and that, and they make a point of saying too that Batman, the whole reason why she became Batgirl, was because she was crushing on Batman. Yeah, so almost the end game was to get to fuck Batman.
Oh, and what? You know, Bruce Wayne totally cries after sex, right? Totally. Like, there's no question.
Fetal position.
Yeah.
So the guy almost kills Batman. Batgirl saves his life and begins to pummel the dude's face in, just beating him almost to death. At which point she realizes, I got to that dark part. You know, it's no longer a game. And this, and she's having this internal turmoil about what's going on. And so you're like, okay, we're 32 minutes into the movie and it's still not Killing Joke.
Well, that
then starts the Killing Joke, because Batman is now telling her, you've reached this point, you need to stop. And then the very first scene of the Killing Joke, where he's walking through Arkham, starts. And so you're kind of like, okay, this is Killing Joke. Most people, I think, were still confused from the first half of the movie we just watched. It was like, we watched this whole thing and then you stopped. Now we're going to start the Killing Joke. And it really does feel like two different styles of writing. It really does.
So does she get shot and paralyzed and all that jazz?
Like I said, they'll never be able to create Bolan's artwork. If they did, that would have been amazing to see that in motion. What they do is they take certain scenes and they just animated those scenes. So sometimes I think what's lost is in the translation of the art. The art tells a story as well as the words, and you lose that. When you take a little scene and you animate it so the character walks, where you lose maybe just the reaction of a character's face frozen for a few seconds and you kind of feed into it. I think some of that's lost in it. I didn't have the same emotional punch. I remember reading The Killing Joke maybe about a year ago. I checked it out from the library, the new extended edition, the new prestige one, because they have this little story at the end, an extra little Batman story done by Bolan that's really good. So I wanted to reread it.
Is that the black and white story he did where it's the guy who's trying to assassinate Batman?
Yeah.
That was a cool story.
That's a really good story. So I wanted to read that, and I knew the library had got it. So I reread The Killing Joke. And of course, the ending is always it's always been a mystery to me. Like, they're both laughing. I know, I think Fryho hates that ending. I talked to him about it one time.
I hated it when I first heard it.
And so I've heard different versions of what the ending means. I kind of like it because it just leaves it up open for interpretation. You take it where you want to. You can create your own ending. But the movie, I mean, and this is the worst part. So in the comic, there's kind of a musical, but it's not really a musical. It's kind of like a poem where the Joker's talking to Gordon through TVs. In the movie, they made it a musical with singing and dancing freaks. That really took me out of the movie. Like, that was, I thought was really bad.
It's hard to maintain a grim and gritty tone when there's a musical number.
Well, and then, okay, so in the beginning, they did a small documentary at the theater with Mark Hamill, where he talked about his history with the Joker and the different versions of the Joker, how Joker's always growing, each voice actor brings something new. So that was kind of interesting. And at the end, they did the music. And of course, they talked about the musical and how the song was going to be this song that kind of changes the tone and changes the gear. And I think, again, that was the mistake of the writers and the directors, were like, oh, we're going to change the tone and the gears of a masterpiece book. We're going to change it and reinterpret it and put a song to it and make it a little goofy. And oh, it was very, very disappointing.
Did they add an epilogue?
Oh, yeah, the ending? Yeah, at the very end. So at the end, of course, of the comic, if you've read it, is Joker tells Batman a joke. Batman starts to laugh, which kind of throws the Joker off. So the Joker starts to laugh. So they both laugh. And in the final panels is actually you're looking at raindrops on the ground as they're both laughing. And then there's a sudden stop, which is implied either Batman killed him or something happened.
Or, well, I thought when I read the book, it just seemed like it trailed off. Like,
see, again, interpretation, whichever you want to take.
Well, and that's what's in the goddamn script. Well, that Alan Moore fucking
heard different
wrote
things. But at the very end, all of a sudden, you see Barbara Gordon wheeling into her room in her wheelchair, talking to her dad on the phone, and she's about to go do something. She starts wheeling down a hallway. All of a sudden, the door opens. She slides in, and she's Oracle. They show the Oracle symbol, and she's getting ready for work. And all this tagged on shit was too much.
Well, see, that's what I wanted to address. Number one, the version of Batgirl that's heavy-handed and violent and doesn't know where the line is called Helena Bertinelli. That's Huntress. They've had that Huntress character in that mode since like the late 80s. The post-crisis Huntress was always the Batgirl that shot people with fucking arrows and potentially killed people and was always pushed in line. She's the one that Batman always had to manage because she was so dangerous that she used methods that he didn't approve of and all that kind of good shit.
Which Batgirl was it that had her mouth covered up?
That was Cassandra Cain. She had her own story. She's actually a very interesting character. I like Cassandra Cain a lot. But she didn't kill because she was actually raised to kill. She was born as the child of a assassin named Kane and Lady Shiva, who is a fucking badass. I look forward to her turning up in the movies at some point because she kicks Batman's ass as far as I'm concerned. She's a greater martial artist than Batman. Cassandra Cain is a better fighter than Batman. Batman can't beat her in hand-to-hand combat, and she was raised to be an assassin herself. But the first time she took a life, she realized that she didn't want this until she ran away from her father, ran away from her training, and ultimately became Batgirl so that she could be a hero to make up for the life she took at the will of her father. So that's a really interesting character, but it doesn't really apply to this.
I was just curious.
They're already assigning personality traits from an entirely different character to Batgirl, because Batgirl's never been the person who has trouble with crossing the line. She's actually much more intellectual and much more emotionally stable than Batman. You know, she's not as brilliant of a detective, but she's someone who's more rational and somebody who has a better understanding, again, of where the line is. So she's absolutely not the person that Batman would ever have to lecture about crossing the line. She was also not an exceptionally libidinous character because, again, there are characters that sexuality is an important part of who they are. That's not who Batgirl is. Never was. And again, who should she be libidinous toward? Dick Grayson, the guy that people have been shipping her with for 40 fucking years now. Another issue is that you have this character who's built up for half an hour as basically the star of the movie, and then she disappears for another quarter of the movie before she gets shot, and then she disappears for another quarter of the movie, and then she turns up at the end as Oracle, so she has nothing to do with resolving her own story. They do all this setting up of her as the protagonist, and then they shoot her, and then she's gone, and then at the end it turns out that she's coping with what happened to her, but she is not given agency. She's not the person who actually brings the Joker to justice. She's not the person who confronts Batman about how he handled bringing in the Joker. Like, why did you fucking have a fucking joke laughing with the Joker after I got shot in the belly, you son of a bitch? So that's another major issue too, because if you're going to add all this other material, it has to make sense within the context of the story that you're telling. If you're going to spend a half hour setting up Batgirl as your protagonist, you can't drop her for the rest of the movie and then tack on a bullshit ending with her as Oracle. Because you're not showing her journey, you cut out from her and you start talking about the Joker and Batman. It's not the Joker and Batman's movie if you spend the first half hour with just the Batgirl.
No. It's a money grab.
Yeah.
They could not put it in the theaters if it was only, honestly, Killing Joke, 30, 40 minute movie at max.
Yeah, that's why they had to pad it out.
So it's like putting too much ingredients in. You already had everything you needed for the cake, but now you want to get ballsy and say, you know what, I want to throw more stuff in it, and just ruined it.
It's bad writing. You got a person who had no business writing a Batgirl story, tacking on all this shit. I guarantee you somebody at DC told him, we need to build up Batgirl's role so that it has more impact when she gets shot, and so that the people who are fans of this character won't get pissed off because we're adapting this story that they already have issues with.
And so they made it way worse.
It made it way worse because they got the wrong guy to write it. He didn't understand the story. I'm not saying that Brian Azzarello is a bad writer in general, but he's a terrible superhero writer. He doesn't understand the concept of heroic fiction. And in this particular instance, he just doesn't understand how to write, period, because anybody who writes understands that you don't set up a protagonist for the first half of a fucking movie and then fucking drop them completely as other people carry on from there. This isn't fucking, what is that, House Behind the Pines, whatever that is.
Then you should have switched it and maybe had Batman be paralyzed, have Bruce Wayne be paralyzed.
Oh, then it's not killing
right?
Joker anymore.
And then it's her going after the Joker.
Yeah, but as he was pointing out, it's important because...
Well, it's already not the Killing Joke.
Well, no.
The point is you're also torturing Jim Gordon, and it doesn't torture Jim Gordon if you shoot Batman in the belly Batgirl has to come in and save the day.
Okay, yeah.
And the thing is, I still don't know how it got an R rating. It really wasn't that bad. Like,
well, you just said there was a prostitute and they had a bag over her head.
But they don't show anything.
It doesn't matter, but those are adult topics.
Everything's
even alluded to.
And not just that, they don't belong in a fucking Batman cartoon. It's a fucking cartoon. Children, regardless of what the rating is, a child is going to watch that shit. It's going to warp their fucking mind.
That's what I said during our Batman and Superman podcast. I felt the same way. They dumped truckloads of Batman and Superman gear off in the child section of stores because of this movie, and they still put that movie. There was nothing in that movie that is appropriate for children under the age of 13.
Yeah.
There's not. But I'm telling you,
I think it was rated PG-13, but 13-year-olds aren't going to the Toys R Us aisle to pick up their action figures.
Right. It's the 8-year-old.
The fucking impressionable scarring of psyche children watching
this
shit.
In the infant section, there were a whole Batman Superman thing, and I'm like, and it's the same thing. Like, this is animation. This is the Batman style animation that parents know are safe for their kids to watch, and then you're turning it into the Killing Joke.
But see, the thing is, if you watch Assault on Arkham, which is very good, I think it's one of DC's best, my personal opinion. It's adult. Harley Quinn fucks Deadshot. I mean, there's all kinds of violence.
Well, and then you've also got their video. Dark. What's their video game that's got all the rad fatalities and stuff?
The Arkham City and Arkham Asylum video games. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Are you talking about Injustice?
Injustice is pretty big. So maybe DC kind of thinks that's...
Oh, I guarantee if you look at the costume design,
I guess they could be getting some mixed signals if Injustice is so popular and people are getting off on watching the fatalities and killing the other
superheroes. But that's bullshit because you're the corporate entity. You know that you want to market these characters to children. When you make a Suicide Squad movie, I don't think you're going to have Suicide Squad action figures in the toddler section because the movie's called Suicide Squad. It's about criminals and mercenaries and black ops that is clearly targeting an older audience. They may throw Batman in that. They may have Joker like prominent in the advertising, but it's clear that this is geared for mature audiences.
Yeah,
sure.
Batman the Killing Joke has Batman's fucking name in it. That's probably like even Assault on Arkham. While Batman's in the packaging, it's still kind of clear that this isn't like the kid's Batman.
Yeah, it's Arkham.
There's a demarcation there.
Assault on Arkham.
Right. This is mostly in the style of the old 90s cartoon. It has the same voice talent. It has the same character designs for the most part. It's going to be sold at Best Buy with a little Lego or some bullshit like that, like they always fucking do. So, yeah, you got to fucking think maybe you don't put Batman in those kinds of stories.
There's a Lego Oracle, but like the legs don't move or whatever. They're not articulated.
Right. They come with legs. What are you talking about?
They're not articulated. Sorry. I apologize for that comment.
No, it's fine. I think it points out the ridiculousness of it. You're the corporate entity. You need to figure out who your audience is. They're not shooting Starfire in the gut in Teen Titans Go because they know that that's not made for mature audiences. That's made for young kids. The cartoon design is, the aesthetic is definitely geared toward younger audiences. So they know that they need that separation.
Well,
it's just
well,
like.
I, can't,
so I almost feel like like oh, wait, if no, they would have done
watch,
like a...
If you watch like Young Justice, I enjoyed Young Justice. I thought it was a very adult series. Even the second season got even better because the characters were darker. But DC kind of gets mixed up where they have, like you said, Go Teen Titans, then you have Young Justice, then you have the Batman the Killing Joke. They're kind of... There's no real separation.
Yeah, well,
it's, so I almost feel like what if they would have gone like a hardcore anime?
Oh, that would have been...
That like super... No, I don't mean like hard... I don't mean... Fucking Powerpuff Girls. You know,
the design.
I'm talking like the darker anime.
I honestly wish they would have tried
more. Almost, it's almost more realistic than the Batman and Bruce Timm design shit, yeah. Right? But you know, I'm thinking like Akira or something.
What else
like
I'm
that.
Saying? If
the,
they had
that
gone
kind of
more
a design
Brian
to
Bolin,
it,
like more detail, I think that would have been neat.
Which well, is what I associate with anime and manga is the more
detailed
animation.
Okay, yeah, I can get behind
not,
that.
Not quite rotoscoped fluidity to it.
Yeah,
but not like. It's literally should be on Saturday morning cartoons and some block with Teen Titans Go. Like, that's right. What that looks like that should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, the design. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The
well,
animation
here's
is,
an idea. Don't. You know who doesn't have to be in the story, honestly? I know it's going to drive some people crazy. Batman's the guy you don't necessarily need to have in the story. Because the Grim Avenger that's going after the Joker, there's no reason why that has to be Batman. It's not Batman's story. It's Joker's story for the most part in the actual comic. They're trying to turn it into Batgirl's story. Batman is the guy you don't necessarily need in there. You could have fucking Nightwing. It's called Nightwing the Killing Joke or just Joker the Killing Joke, you've got more leeway. But if you want to have Batman a cultural icon that you try to sell to young children, don't put him in shit that's too fucking advanced and too fucking dark. Even the Christopher Nolan stuff, it was still clear that Batman was a hero, and even though it might have been disturbing to see what the Joker was doing, what Two-Face was doing, I don't know that it was ever dark enough to where it would be completely inappropriate for maybe a younger child. But it's also because of the aesthetic, because of the darker movie and a more realistic movie, I think you can tell just from looking at it that it's supposed to be for older people. And I don't know that they really did they have action figures for those movies? Were they marketing
like Dark
those
Knight
movies?
Returns?
Sure. Yeah. To like younger
were
kids.
Were there Dark Knight Returns?
I know for a while the Joker they were that's when Heath Ledger did his Joker, that's when Brian Arzalo whatever came out with his book, his Joker. And Joker went from a buffoon to more of this dark narcissistic.
He's a fucking serial killer, creepy
yeah, but
motherfucker.
It, but
yeah.
He never they played him like that, but he was always kind of the was it the what would they refer to him as? Is
the clown the, prince of crime?
Crime. Yeah, kind of this really goofy character. Where Heath Ledger then played him more of like a sociopath that just dressed up like a clown to kind of disarm you. And this, I don't know, this version of Joker was...
I want Warner Brothers to be able to embrace their more mature audiences. I think
they tried that already with
well,
Batman.
Well, no, here's the thing. DC Comics and Warner Brothers, because you got to understand, Mac has been was griping at me earlier today because I kept posting sales numbers for books from the mid-80s.
Lots of sales numbers.
Lots of sales numbers, we got a lot
of sales numbers on our Twitter timeline.
But if you look at the DC sales from the Crisis era, you see just how fucking low they were compared to the Marvel sales. You know, like, books like The Comet Man, which was quarter bin fodder, the New Universe books, quarter bin fodder, was outselling Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman easily multiple times over.
For real.
Yeah, so they were just getting swamped. Part of what made DC come alive again after this long period of just being distant second was they started gearing their books toward mature audiences. You had The Dark Knight Returns, you had The Killing Joke, you had Watchmen.
The Cult?
The Cult, yeah. That one's pretty cool. A lot of people don't like that one, but I didn't realize that because when the book came out, it seemed to me like everybody fucking loved The Cult. Yeah. The Cult was like almost like a sequel to The Dark Knight Returns. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm a big Jim Starlin fan, and it was great Bernie Wrightson artwork. In retrospect, though, a lot of Batman fans really disliked that book, and it's just not talked about very much anymore either.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but in recent years, I've started to find that out. But anyhow, so DC Comics started to realize that they could find an audience by going for mature readers, by going for the adult audiences, not just going for the hip, late high school audience that Stan Lee was always targeting. But actually going into college, going for like graduate school comic books like Vertigo. I think that what Warner Brothers can do that Marvel, especially under Disney, can't do is you can go for the extremely advanced stuff. You could do Watchmen. You could adapt The Question and Sandman and Swamp Thing and all these books that were darker and more sophisticated. But just like that DC did with Vertigo, you need to put that behind the adult wall. You need to put that behind the adult curtain. Don't have Batman in those stories. Tell those stories with characters like The Question. Tell it with characters that are more morally flexible and are clearly targeting adults. And then you could also go younger than Marvel for your Superman stuff, your Batman stuff, because that's who those characters are designed for. They're not made for fucking teenagers. They're made for kids. That's why they're simple characters. They're characters showing morality. They have extraordinary powers. They're colorful. They're fun. Target the younger than Marvel audience. And then you can also have stuff that meets in the middle, like Suicide Squad, that's a little bit more mature, but can still fit in that Marvel audience. Marvel can't have that versatility because everything has to be connected. It all has to be one universe. It's all Disney-fied. Every single one of those characters are going to be in action figures that they're going to sell to kids.
In the movies.
In the movies and in the cartoons, too. They're always targeting...
Because they've got the Netflix stuff.
They're targeting the... They do have the... You're right. You have the Netflix. I'm not sure I'm 100% comfortable with that, honestly, though, because they make a point of saying that's part of this connected universe. But at the same time, you do want to have your audience be able to mature with you. And I don't think very many people are going to go, hey, you know, little Timmy, let's go watch Jessica Jones, you know?
No.
So it kind of works. Well, DC needs to do that too, but they need to understand Captain America isn't on the Netflix show.
Right.
You don't have a Tony show up in Luke Cage as he's busting drug dealers and stuff. You've got to have these clear divisions, and DC doesn't seem to understand that. Warner Brothers doesn't seem to understand that, but also DC in the comics, they keep adulterating characters that you need to keep pure and clean because they're for children. Because the day that you can't give anything Superman related to a child is a day that you fucking failed.
Fucked up, yeah.
That was Frank's soapbox.
Hey, so what about the Game of Thrones thing?
Oh,
So were you on board with people complaining about that or not on board?
No, what I was basically saying was if it's an issue of adaptation and George R.R. Miller has a bunch of rapey shit, then you should be able to adapt the rapey shit because if you're a fan of the books, that's there. You can try to sugarcoat it or soft pedal it when you adapt it if you want to, and then people are going to call you out for not being true to the material. But you probably shouldn't go out of your way to have the exploitative material inside the show that wasn't from the books just to gin it up for the HBO audience.
But what about this, Sugar Puff? Why don't you just turn the fucking TV show off? If a show's too rapey for you, it's on HBO.
Yeah.
It's on HBO. Yeah. If you're like, man, there's just way too many titties in this show. I don't really need to be seeing all these titties and all these people getting raped.
Yeah.
Well, first of all,
they've always had
the
titties.
Show's fucking medieval times.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, you know what? Women weren't treated so great.
Yeah.
In this, and plus it's a
complete, but it's a fantasy. You can have anything you want to happen in a fantasy.
Right. And the person who created this fantasy in these books has a lot of chicks get raped.
Yep.
Mm, you know what? Then maybe this book series isn't for you. Maybe the TV show isn't for you. So turn it off. Don't complain every week about it.
I think that maybe the TV show where in the first episode the incestuous couple attempt to murder a child to keep their secret, you're probably going to be in some pretty uncomfortable territory there. You should have probably addressed that when you first started watching the show.
Right. The overt incest and child attempted child murdering and consequent paralysis of in the first was it the first one or two episodes of the whole series?
There's a lot of
you need to understand that the show wasn't going to be great. Look at the freaking Bolton's. Is it Bolton?
Yeah, Roose and Ramsey.
Isn't there Ramsey Bolton? Right? Isn't there a fucking symbol? The flayed man.
Right.
I mean, come on. This is bad stuff's going to happen to people in this whole show.
Yeah.
So relax.
The show is based on bad shit happening to people.
Right. So I don't want to hear again if this were real historical events that had happened
it's based
TV.
On the War of the Roses, which was real historical shit that happened.
Okay, so then Sansa is it at some point a real historical character?
Not necessarily. No. But
then
what
shut the fuck up.
Then based on somebody.
I'm fucking backing you up, shithead.
Right.
I'm saying that it is based on real shit that happened, and the real shit that happened never had a cool barbarian chick on a flying flame throwing dragon. So that's your fucking extension of hey, here's a fantasy situation that shit didn't happen in real life. She's your heroine. You actually have a heroine in those times, maybe not so much.
This isn't a story about the revolutionary time and Betsy Ross gets gang raped, right? Like that's right. Not what this is. And you can't be like, hey, whoa, don't disrespect Betsy Ross, and you shouldn't because that's a real human being who existed and is in American fucking culture, right? That was a real person. They still have a family that are alive, right? That this is not the case here. These are fictional characters, and so anyway, the Supergirl thing because you did go on your rant, and that was a very good rant, and I appreciate you doing that. So I understand it. If I was taking it more as don't call Supergirl a bitch, you know what I mean?
Well, and also don't kill her and you retroactively erase her from continuity, and then when you do bring her back, make her from an alternate dimension where she's a being made of protoplasm who's psychologically unstable, who then thinks she's Clark Kent and gender swaps, and then she decides to, she gets manipulated by Lex Luthor and becomes his sex slave, and then she bonds with a Satan worshiping murderess, and the protoplasm melts off, and then she becomes an earthbound angel with ties to the supernatural, and then they throw all that out the window, and they bring back the Supergirl that was from Krypton, but now she's like seduced by Darkseid, and she's constantly leaning toward the dark side, and she runs around in a halter top and looks kind of slutty, and is very confused and kind of hates humanity and isn't a heroine.
That's cool. But also, what were we talking about?
Was there a Superwoman?
Yeah, actually. There's been a few of them. Really? They're not terribly important, though.
There is a Wonder Woman who gets matched up with Superman. I'm just wondering,
because there's never been a Bat Boy.
He was a National Enquirer.
But I'm just saying,
I believe there's a Bat Boy musical that is showing here in Houston right now. No joke.
What?
Yeah. Okay, so, but my thing was, what was my thing? So, if it's that people were sick of that was the mentality of comic books, and him saying shoot or kill the bitch was just a personification of all those attitudes that have held back. I get that. In that case, be upset, and I'm down with that. That's cool. But at the same time, if they were like, hey guys, at the end of fucking Secret Wars, we want to have Black Panther kill Namor, and somebody says kill the fucker, I'm not gonna be like, how dare you? Namor the Submariner has been around since 1939, and how dare you just cast him off? Kill the fucker? He's been around since 1939. You know what I mean? If you were to get upset about something like that, then I think you need to just take a step back.
Understandable. You know, the problem is, when they kill Namor, literally they did kill Namor. Prince T'Challa, or King T'Challa, did kill Namor, and then he was almost immediately brought back, and then after Secret War, Hyperion from another dimension ripped his head off, so they killed him like a second time in the span of like a year.
Hey, kill the fucker. I don't care.
Kill the fucker.
But you see what I mean?
But he's not a real guy, so it's okay. There's that, but there's also the fact that when Namor comes back, he's still basically still going to be Namor. Where when they decided to kill the bitch back in 1986, then for 20 fucking years, you had all these bullshit ersatz Supergirls that weren't the Supergirl character you wanted to have come back.
But that's a whole other thing, though. That's a whole other thing. I think that that's too
different. Well, no, because there aren't enough heroines, especially heroines with the history of Supergirl.
And that's fine. That's fine. But don't get,
aquatic guys are a dime a dozen.
I don't know. But at the same time, though, calling Supergirl a bitch doesn't, I don't know. I just don't think, because she's not real.
But it shows the attitudes of the people.
And that's the issue. Okay.
The other thing I was going to say, fuck. Orange is the New Black. The first season of that show kicks ass. Great fucking show. It's based on the real life experiences of the Lane character Piper. I think it was Piper. Anyway, she actually went to prison on drug charges, and she was in there for like a year or so, and the show kind of reflected her experiences, but also fictionalized and dramatized. Then the second season proceeds to have this elaborate story of a woman who comes in and radicalizes a bunch of the prisoners, and it basically most of the characters on the show look terrible by the end of the second season. And also, because one of the main character actresses wanted to leave the show, they wrote her out, and they have to bring her back into the third season. And so in the third season, they're trying to get back what they had in the first season, because they knew they screwed some stuff up in the second season, but then they screwed up some other stuff. And then in the fourth season, things just get completely nuts, because they bust in a whole bunch of new prisoners, and you've got like people getting like branded with swastikas, and one of the prisoners gets killed. It's been a long time character. And it's like, okay, this show just doesn't, it's atonal as fuck. And all the characters have been ruined by the end of the second season, much less the third season. And I'm just sick of the fucking show, and I just need to stop watching it. And so I got three seasons into Orange the New Black, and I'm like, okay, I've had enough, and I stopped watching it. But I never said, let's get rid of all the shit that I didn't like and fix the show to make it suit me. I just stopped watching the show because it's not what I'm enjoying. After five seasons of Game of Thrones, if you're tired of all the rapiness and you're tired of all the violence, well, guess what? That show has been consistent throughout. Maybe there's been some quality difference, but in terms of their mature content and the dark antisocial aspects of the show, that's been there throughout. If it finally burns you out, if you're tired of it, then just stop fucking watching it. Right. And don't try to force people to change the show to better suit your mental status. Now, years into the show hasn't changed. You've changed, or your tolerance of the show has changed.
You're not going to get on message boards and complain that they are doing a disservice to the character from Orange is the New Black that you loved so much in season one. Season two is not that character, right? You're just to stop watching the show.
Yeah, and it's also, it doesn't help that was based on real people too, and they went so far out. So it's like, just fuck it. So I just don't need to watch it. It didn't work anymore. So I went off and I did something
else. Lots of stuff on TV.
Lots of peak TV. There's peak so many TV. Good shows on. Yeah. You don't like something, go watch something else.
Yep.
If you can't hear what I'm trying to say, if you can't read from the same page, maybe I'm going deaf, maybe I'm going blind, maybe I'm out of my mind. Facebook likes from Keith G. Baker and Ryan Daly. All at Twitter were the 108th Sage, Abel Petzilla, Adam Black Moon, Bone Dragon Comics, Brian Mulvey, Chris Sheehan, Chris Thompson of Orbital Comics, which Frank visited once in the UK, Coffee and Comics Blog, Comic Book Insurance, Comic Reflections Podcast, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, Dr. G, Nerdologist, Ed Moore Jr., The Fire and Water Podcast Network, Jeffrey Brown, Joseph Crawford, Carl Zlee, Keith G. Baker, The Mean Geek Podcast, Michael Bailey, Nethead, Odell Abner Dracula, Professor Riptide, Randy Caldwell, Scott Bachman, The Silver and Gold Podcast, Son of Cthulhu, Hashtag Follow Friday, Everybody Dance Now, Stella at Girl to Oracle, Storm Chaser 2162, Sin at Alias Scarecrow, Talking Wonder Woman, Trick or Talk, Warlord Worlds, and Willie Yarbrough. The Mean Geek Podcast tweeted, give them a listen, Coffee and Comics Blog tweeted, thanks, I think, Storm Chaser 2162 tweeted, Suicide Squad looks like the Fred Durst of comic book movies, Anthony Emil said, try this for an idea, just go see a movie and enjoy it and not try to overanalyze it. I equate this movie to the Iron Man 2. It's laying groundwork for the DCMU to come.
DCMU to come. It's laying groundwork.
DCMU to come.
Mach ich mein EC. DCMU to come.
Just go see a movie.
Drive G, Nerdologist of the Pulp to Pixel podcast, which universally loved the movie, tweeted, listening to your review of Suicide Squad seems like Howard the Duck is the only comic movie you guys liked. That last tweet sound way more confrontational than I meant it. Kyle Benning of the King Size Comics Giant Size Fun podcast tweeted, have a bad Monday at work, laugh it off with this hilarious recap of the train wreck that is the Suicide Squad movie. Grant Richter, also known by the internet alias of Storm Chaser 2162 on Twitter, wrote, if Warner Brothers wanted to make their DC line dark, they should have started with dark, lesser known characters that they can tweak without generating too much nerd rage. Even though Blade wasn't a Marvel Studios movie, it still started putting the idea of Marvel characters in movies in people's wheelhouses. If they had done Suicide Squad right, they could have made it the first movie in the series and play up the idea of these heroes that haven't been introduced yet that all the villains have vendettas against. Also, since DC is a lot more heavily steeped in magic than Marvel, they could have gone a supernatural route with Etrigan, Swamp Thing, Deadman, hell, the fucking Creature Commandos would have been better than this crap. My concern is that the DC movies are going to make the genre pass before it it's time. As a comics geek with a young daughter, I was really proud of DC about a year ago for making their female characters more accessible to girls, and also promoting some of their female characters as role models. There was a Wonder Woman comic outside of continuity where WWE got into typical comic book fights, but also dealt with social issues that tween girls face. The Supergirl show had a lot of girl power without being overpowering. The Superhero Girls cartoons made female characters relatable to elementary age girls, with Harley being the goofy Pinkie Pie type character. After the Suicide Squad movie, I feel like they've done a complete 180 in regard to female character respect in relation to Harley. As a dad, it's just offensive. And finally, Count Dracula wrote, I was waiting for this episode because I expected a lot of dissenting opinions and debate, but everyone seemed to be on the exact same page, myself included. I think you guys touched on every one of my many, many complaints, and thus I don't have much to comment on. Okay, now he was close. Tried to domesticate you, but you're an animal, baby. It's in your nature. Just let me liberate you. You don't need no papers. That man is not your mate, and that's why I'm gonna take you.
Oh, if I could only see that the joke was on me, that the joke was on me.
The preceding program is a non-profit fan production. Any copyrighted materials contained therein are believed borrowed under fair use with no copyright infringement intended. Please feel free to leave comments at the Rolled Spine's Productions WordPress blog. You can also send us Twitter comments through the Rolled Spine Podcast Twitter. Thank you for listening.